This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to ExpressPros.com to find your location. That's ExpressPros.com.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Live on the Free Odyssey app.
BT is out back on the fan on this Tuesday morning. We'll get back to your calls here, 888-808-1019. We're talking Mets, we're talking Soto, we're talking some Yanks. So, on the topic of Juan Soto, my buddy Will Salmon of The Athletic wrote an article today, BT. Where is the Soto shuffle gone? And there are some
Where
quotes.
Have you gone, Soto?
There are some
shuffle.
Quotes. So I said I saw it on Sunday, and Will's right. He described it better than I did here. Whereas it was kind of like a half Soto shuffle on Sunday, where he stared at the pitcher. He gave you one of those. Mitchell Parker, I think, for the Nationals, came up and in on him, and Soto gave you one of those quick, like, mm-hmm. Semi shuffle.
Didn't sell it fully.
So there's some quotes in here from Soto. Let's get to it.
Okay.
This is Will Salmon's article here in The Athletic. After officially passing 1 month into the Mets season, The Athletic needed to know whether the shuffle is coming back. Soto, quote, "It's going to come out one day. It just depends. I just got to feel it." The follow-up question was, well, what would prompt the shuffle? What does it take? What do you mean you got to feel? Quote, "It takes a lot."
Very deep exchange.
It's going to come. You will see it. But I think there is an important part of this where even in the minimal quotes, BT, where Soto clearly saying it's going to come out one day. It just depends. I just got to feel it. Yeah, well, that's the point, is that you can watch him and know that he's not feeling it. What it is. Who knows? That leads to the speculation. Is he not feeling being a Met? Is he not feeling? Well, I don't. I'm just saying.
I got a theory. I got them.
But he's not feeling it. He admitted it. So we all said, "Where's the shuffle?" Will Salmon now doing reporting on it, and in those quotes, it'll come one day. It's just a lot goes into it. I just got to feel it. Well, okay. Well, why aren't you feeling it? Is it because he's struggling? And is he struggling because he doesn't have the confidence that a shuffle would give him? Like. And it sounds ridiculous that we're talking about the Soto shuffle, but I think it's a big I think it's a big deal. It's one of the first things that we were talking about as it pertains to Juan Soto, where he started not to look like himself.
I'd have to make a song. You ever hear the song Lito Shuffle?
No. Curly Shuffle, yes.
You don't know Lito? I guarantee Lito is... Hey, Dove or Zoo, just find that at some point. I'm going to call for it in a minute. I guarantee that it's a song that you've heard, but you don't know the actual title. I'd have to come up with when you had the Yankees, KKKKs.
Yes, like, Yankees. We are the Yankees.
I'm going to have to come up with my own version of Soto Shuffle here. All right, couple of things here. Number one, I respect him not forcing it. Number one, it's my first reaction.
You respect him not forcing
it? Yeah.
But, dude, that's a part
I'm going to tell you why. To me, when he does that, every aspect of his professional universe is aligned. Physically, he feels unstoppable. Mentally, he's a step ahead of the pitcher. Everything is in sync. What he thought the pitcher would throw, he did. He saw it. He anticipated. He is right on it. And he knows. And baseball's different. It's not like just being strong in football. Baseball, a lot has to be right for you to feel amazing in the box. Where he just knows, like when he went deep in the playoffs with the Yankees in Cleveland, that no matter what you do, I'm going to see this pitch and I'm going to flick my hands and fire this in the third base dugout because I know that that's what you're going to do and I know I can't square that ball up. But when you eventually do what I know you're also going to eventually do, I'm going to rock it 425 feet to dead center like he did. He's not feeling it because he's not fully there yet as a hitter.
Well, why not?
It's that simple.
Because hitting is hard. So now
it's not about being a Met.
But that's not an
excuse.
Hitting is hard for you and me. It's not for him.
Well, if it wasn't hard for him, why doesn't he hit 360 every year? Why doesn't anybody hit 360? Because it's hard.
He's arguably the best hitter in the game.
No, he's not.
What are you talking about? When he's on, he's one of the best offensive players in the sport.
One of. He's not Judge. Yeah. We don't need to Judge Soto. God, Judge is hitting 420, dude.
Yeah, I know. Aaron Judge is also not a 420 hitter.
Well, nobody is.
Yeah, okay.
Not even Ted Williams was.
But that's the point. So let's not, argue over semantics. Juan Soto, when you say, well, baseball's hard. Yeah, for us, it's not hard for them.
Yes, it is hard for them.
That's not an excuse. That's a bullcrap excuse.
No, it's not. It's not an excuse.
Hey, baseball's hard. No. That's why Volpe can't hit, because baseball's hard.
No.
It's ridiculous.
Listen, when you look at it on a shallow interpretation, baseball's hard. Well, yeah. No kidding. I mean, if it wasn't hard, then we'd all be there. Right. Understood. But what makes it extra hard is the breakdown of mechanics, the stuff that the other pitcher has. Like, we have to incorporate this for Juan Soto. I don't think for a second that he's not feeling himself enough to do the shuffle because he misses the Yankees or he misses Judge or he's not feeling the Mets. I just think, however he got ready for the season, sometimes you start a season, bang, and it clicks. Like last year for Soto, and the opposite, Judge last year was the opposite. I'm sure Aaron Judge felt pretty, even though he missed a lot of time in the spring. I'm sure he felt pretty good when he started the season last year, okay? But he hit 190, for the first 15, 20 games, whatever it was. He didn't see it coming, and I'm sure he was a defeated, diminished version of himself inwardly. And when you feel that inwardly, it's tough to project alpha level, all-time confidence when you don't feel it. It's much more deep than just saying baseball hard.
I get it. Okay, fair enough. Bottom line is, he said it. Will Salmon got the quotes from him. He's not feeling it. It'll come out. You'll see it eventually. But right now, he's not feeling it. So the question is, why? Why is he not feeling it? He's not comfortable. He's not, what? Is he not having fun? Is he struggling? I've said he's struggling, but, oh, no, Steve Cohen, no, he's not struggling. Or everybody with the Mets, oh, no, how dare you criticize him? It's only been 20 games. Okay, well, maybe I was right and everybody else is wrong, because now Soto admits to not feeling it. Why is he not feeling it? That's what I want to know. I think that's the key. How does then he get to feeling it? Does it just all of a sudden he wakes up one day and says, oh, I feel like shuffling, or I'm feeling like myself again? Why isn't Juan Soto feeling like himself in the first 30 games of the season?
I really wish I had the answer for you. Let me ask you this. So there are days, now maybe the audience can't quite detect this, right? But I know, because you and I have been doing this for a long time, I guarantee there are days where you just feel better than other days.
100%.
Okay.
Happens in every day of life, even before doing a show like this. Whatever.
Correct. Yeah. But there's some days where no matter, every single thought that you're searching for comes right to you. Every syllable is fluid and it pops. And you're a combination of being, aggressive and funny. And the whole package is there. Like, you feel like the Babe Ruth of sports radio, right? When we're on our game, we've all been there. There's other days where you feel like, I missed that one. That was right away. Okay. How did I miss that one? It's called being a human being.
Understood, but it's been a full month.
It's a month. It's not hitting 170 like Bellinger.
No, but it's been a full month without that. It hasn't been a full month without the shuffle, but you get the point. Early on, the shuffle was there. Then it started to go away a little bit. So, and it hasn't been back in a while. That's, if he went without it for a week, nobody'd be talking about it. If he went without it for a few games, not a big deal. The fact that it's been a prolonged absence where he has not felt or been like himself, and it's also, to your point, he's not hitting 130. Like, he's had some good, he's hitting the ball hard, he's getting on base. Okay, well then, what's the issue exactly?
His ceiling is higher than somebody else. I mean, right now, he's certainly not vintage Soto, but he doesn't feel like himself, so he's not going to start dancing around in the dirt and making himself look like a fool. Would you rather?
I agree with you there.
Would you rather see him force it and then go 0-for-4 with two pop-ups and a ground ball into a double play? No, I'd rather see him bust it out when he feels like it's time to bust it out.
But don't you think like it's just a mentality? Because for me, well, you could use our analogies a little different. We don't have to physically go out there and hit a baseball.
Yeah, yep.
With him, it is. But I also believe the right mindset, like it all starts from the mindset.
I agree
with
that.
Whether it's a song you listen to in the morning that gets you going.
Or a pre-show meeting.
Whatever.
I agree.
What I'm saying for him, you get up, get your fit right, get your attitude right, get into that batter's box, and then you're feeling yourself.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, well, I hit a home run, now I'm feeling myself. And by the way, he's hit a couple of home runs in the Minnesota series, and it's still...
Was he at now 2.5, or is it 3.5?
Yeah, 3.5 still. He's still stuck on 3.5, the almost home run, the other, you know, the last homestand. So it's not just, I don't think, a byproduct of the results. Something is off with Juan Soto's mentality to where he's not feeling himself.
I don't disagree with that. I think the real interesting root of it is why.
Point is, something is off with Juan Soto.
Yes.
He admitted it. We all know it, but now he admitted it to Will Sound and The Athletic, even in a limited exchange.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see it. Don't worry, it'll come out one day, but he's got to be feeling it. We get it. I get that. What's going to make him feel it? And why isn't he feeling it? That's the question. That's what I have to know. Chris is in Stanford. What's up, Chris?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. I'm a big fan of the show. I listen every day.
Thanks,
I want to chime in on the Soto. Thank you, guys. I want to chime in on the Soto topic. For me, you know, I want to rephrase the conversation a little bit. I'm a big Mets fan. I don't really care if he's happy or not. For me, the issue is I see once in a while a lack of effort and hustle. There was that game 2 weeks ago with bases loaded, one out. He grounded into the double play, and he didn't bust it down the line, and he was out at first. To me, it's things like that piss me off way more than if he's happy or not. What do you guys think about that?
Look, I haven't noticed, and thank you for the call, Chris, a lack of hustle. I mean, the play that comes to mind, obviously, is the pop-up that dropped the other day that led to the horrible loss on Sunday. But to me, that wasn't even a lack of hustle. It was a lazy-looking play where it didn't feel like... Now, remember, it was a 7-1 game. Not excusing
him. The sun went as us?
Yeah.
I actually give him a pass on that.
Okay, fair enough. But still, like, there didn't seem to be the level of urgency or panic that you would like to see with an outfielder where he loses a ball in the sun, where it's, where the hell is it? Where the hell is it?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
That he played, like, cool and calm and was like, all right, yeah, whatever, no big deal. I don't think that it's a lack of effort or a lack of hustle with Soto, but it clearly is a lack of feeling himself right now. What makes Soto special in my mind is his confidence, is him feeling himself. The results aren't going to be there every single time, but this is a confident player, the ultra-confident player. It's why I love him so much. Where is that confidence? It's not there. He admitted to it by telling Will Salmon, I'm not feeling it.
But is it a lack of confidence due to a lack of results, or are the results a lack of confidence? Now, based on the I don't know either, but based on the numbers that I gave Sal in the first hour, where you look at his exit velo and his barrel rate, they're still, everything's in the 90th percentile. Again, not to water it down and geek it up too much with the numbers, but, you know, if he's in the 17th percentile of barrel rate, I'm okay. I can sit here and say he's not squaring up the baseball. That's on Juan Soto. But he has had some bad luck, not to make an incredible excuse, but the numbers are the numbers, and the data is what drives baseball at this point. Like, we no longer need to guess where a guy is. There are different types of 1-for-20s. You know, a Volpe 1-for-20 where he's flailing away and striking out 7 or 8, 9 times and, you know, really soft contact is different, or could be different, than a Judge 1-for-20 or a Soto 1-for-20. So there's always nuance there, and he's hitting the ball fairly hard. So I just think that it's a matter of time before they start dropping. And when they start dropping and the results are there, now I think you see the confidence.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
50, Bentley, right back at it on the Fan in New York. I'm hanging out, taking calls, watching the Knicks game. The Knicks are starting to get it back a little bit. It's 74-67 as we go to commercial break. It seems like Whatever they talked about at halftime, they're like, yo, we can't lose another third quarter. Like, we absolutely just blew the second quarter. We have to come out with the right energy here. It's a good game. It is a good game. 888-808-1019. We're talking Juan Soto and the Mets right now. Obviously, the Mets lost back-to-back games to lose the series. But, silver lining, Juan Soto looked like the guy you paid for. Juan Soto looked like the superstar that he is. Let's hear what Juan Soto had to say after the game. You know, you would think that after he hit two home runs, his first Citi Field home run, his first two-homer game as a Met, there'd be a little pressure off of, he'd be relieved a little, get the monkey off your back, as some would say. Go ahead and play that, Connor.
What pressure? I mean, I don't have any pressure. These guys, I mean, Mendoza has been really clear with me to make me feel comfortable and going out there and play. I don't have any pressure at all, so it's just two homers that weren't enough to get the win, so whatever.
So I like that he gave credit to Mendoza, his manager, right? Because as much as we talk about Juan Soto and we try to analyze his teammates, we try and analyze what the clubhouse is like, we have no idea. We're not in there. But I do think that Mendoza, and he chose to go be a Met and be under second-year manager Carlos Mendoza. I do think that Mendoza talks to all of his players and has meetings with all of his guys one-on-one. And he said, there's no pressure on him. There's no pressure on him. But when he ended that with the whatever, that's a little bit of a sign that, it's got to him. Can we play that again? Somebody, and I know we don't have the question, but I think the question was posed to Juan Soto as far as saying something along the lines of, are you feeling less pressure? Let's play that again. Juan Soto, are you feeling less pressure now? Or, someone asked if today's homers took away any pressure that he had been feeling.
What pressure? I mean, I don't have any pressure. These guys, Mendoza has been really clear with me to make me feel comfortable and going out there and play. I don't have any pressure at all, so it's just two homers that weren't enough to get the win, so whatever.
So in my live chat, Luis writes, Soto has played for four teams. He's been in two leagues, two World Series, won a World Series, was in the last World Series, been to 43 postseason games, and they're asking him about pressure on May 1st. He says, New York reporters, man. New York reporters read Twitter like us. New York reporters are fans like us, even though they're media and they're supposed to be neutral. They're thinking and asking what fans would ask. But it's funny. Juan Soto doesn't have any pressure on him. He's got the richest contract in sports history. The pressure was to get there. There's no pressure at 2:30 in the afternoon in Queens on Thursday, May 1st. He hit the two homers. And if you even go back to his struggles, games and series and weeks before, this is a guy that just told you, there's no pressure. I'm just not performing the way that I want to perform or that you expect me to perform as a $600 or $765 million man. Let's go to Rich and Beth Page. What's up, Rich? You got it.
Hey, Keith. Good to talk to you. My question is, what do you think Juan Soto does after he goes, he hits a home run, he does a walk into the dugout, and then he goes into the clubhouse? Is there, family in there or something?
Yeah, he goes and he greets.
He doesn't hang out with the guy after his home runs. It is one walk through, and then into the clubhouse.
Well, his mom wasn't allowed in the Yankees clubhouse, so she might be camped out in there.
It's strange, no?
It is kind of strange. I don't know. At least we got a bat flip out of him. People have been waiting to see his signature shuffle, but I don't know. I did not catch it with my own eyes. I got to go back and look at it. I've been listening to most of the games, and it was during the middle of the day. But I guess I got to go look. He's disappearing into the, he's going down into the clubhouse and not, sitting in there.
Home runs. One walk through to the guys, and it's, subdued. It's, nothing. It's just, yeah, what's up? And then into the clubhouse. Both of them. It's weird.
It'd be great if he came out with that Soto OMG sign that they had in spring training that said S-O-T-O-M-G. That would have been great if he emerges from the clubhouse with a, oh my God.
You're the man, Keith.
Thanks for the call, Rich. 888-808-1019. Yeah, let me pull up the highlights and see. Because there is a little bit of conversation about, why isn't he shuffling? Okay, we got a bat flip out of him today. But, like, let me watch this homer and see if Juan Soto disappears on his teammates and doesn't even crack a smile. I don't know. I think the clips that I saw were they don't have that far. You got to be watching SNY, watching the game all the way to see. Yeah, the clips that I saw online. I don't know. Are we making something out of nothing? I saw SNY with the shot from the dugout of him flipping the bat, and it seemed like fans gave an extra yeah once he flipped the bat. Like, yeah, he does love us. He likes it here.
We have some breaking news.
We have breaking Mets news.
Oh, boy. Right. Someone's hurt.
Hide your phones. It's a company with sound. The future of A.J. Minter this year is very much in doubt.
Nah. Any updates on Minter? Just his timetable and the severity of his lat injury?
Yeah. All we know right now is we're dealing with a pretty significant injury here. So he continues to talk to multiple people to see what we got here. But the one thing we know is pretty significant.
Tim?
Is surgery being discussed in those second opinions?
It is on the table. So, and that's why he's, you know, we're providing him with all the information. So, he makes the right decision. So, that's why we're still waiting and talking to multiple people.
And would surgery be season ending?
Yes.
Wow. Well, I'm thinking about it because when I first heard it wasn't a tricep, it was a lat.
Yeah.
My non-educated physical brain said, okay, it's a lat injury. You may miss time, but...
Yeah, but how is it confused? That's weird that it's confused. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Why was it originally a tricep injury?
I think it was more, this is what they thought it was. As he walked off the mound, he felt some discomfort. And then after the game is when they clarified it was actually a lat. So it wasn't like they said it was a tricep.
I understand that, but if you have issues in your tricep, how is that... Your tricep is here.
Yeah.
How does that become here?
I don't know. You tell me. You're the guy with muscles.
I don't know. It's just the fact that it moved that far is very odd to me.
Yeah, that sucks, man. That just absolutely sucks. A.J. Minter was off to a decent start.
Yes, he was.
He is the one lefty in this bullpen you trust. Obviously, Danny Young is also there. And that's significant. You know, if you were going to tell me he was going to miss 2 months, I'd say, okay, great. It's like a trade acquisition. But losing A.J. Minter for the season is a big blow. You've already seen it over the last couple of days with the Met bullpen, a little shortened without A.J. Minter. Look, there's nothing you could say other than this sucks. It's part of baseball. I mean, injuries are part of baseball, and they're awful. And come July, assuming the Mets are still in this great position, they will probably be bidding on some kind of left-handed reliever. Right. There's really not much you can do about it right now. It's more opening up opportunities for others. Dednell Nunez is currently pitching at AAA. Maybe he comes up and picks up where he left off last year. But unfortunately, much like last year, where the Mets had a hole in terms of a left-handed arm out of the bullpen, they kind of have it again. So clearly by that sound from Carlos Mendoza, it does not sound good in terms of health of A.J. Minter. A.J. Minter, we barely knew you. I mean, how many games has he actually pitched as a Met?
12.
So, very unfortunate. Oh, by the way, I totally forgot about something, actually. They did sign Brooks Raley a few days ago. Remember Brooks Raley? He's actually pretty good for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And then he got hurt. He had Tommy John surgery. He's actually coming
back
in June. Yeah.
All right.
The Mets signed him. And so you know what? Brooks Raley comes back to replace A.J. Minter.
2 months.
You know what I was nervous about, T?
What's that?
So I saw the Met lineup. That's all I saw, just the Met lineup. And there were some interesting missings, if you will, from the Met lineup. And so when Sean broke the glass and said injury, I was actually concerned about, you ready for who? Brandon Nimmo. Because shockingly, even with a lefty on the mound tonight, Brandon Nimmo, who drove in 9 runs yesterday.
He worked too hard yesterday.
He ran too much. He's not in the lineup, which I'm not against. I think Nimmo should get a day off once a week, maybe once every 2 weeks.
Do you want to hear why?
Oh, so he is hurt.
Yeah, Mendy spoke about why he's not in the lineup.
So is he hurt, Sean?
I wouldn't call him hurt, but I have the audio.
Oh, jeez.
Here we go.
Carlos, even though Rodriguez has not
put up great numbers against lefties this year. I'm sure that was the reason, theoretically, for resting Brandon today. But was there anything else that went into it?
No, I'm not resting Brandon, especially after that game last night. He's just sick today. He's in rough shape right now. We got a lot of guys dealing with this flu, whatever we want to call it, and fever, pretty weak. So he's getting an IV right now, and hopefully he's a player for us at some point today. But we got to give him a couple hours. But as of right now, he's pretty rough.
You know what I love about that? First of all, I hope Brandon's okay.
Pretty rough.
Where were they last? Where were they?
D.C. Saquon got him sick. Or Trump got him sick.
Isn't it like...
Or Big Dom got him sick. Let's just blame the Eagles at this point.
I feel like everybody that we knew, and maybe they're on a different schedule, was sick like a month ago.
Yeah.
The flu was a month ago.
Yeah, but it made its way to D.C. now.
No, it was in D.C. It was the same.
Oh.
That's just
new strand.
Yeah.
This is odd.
My favorite part of that clip is Mendy laughing at Howie Rose, and me, I guess,
but I
for suggesting that they would sit Brandon Dimmore after a 9-RBI game.
I kind of appreciate how straightforward Mendy is.
Oh, he's very straightforward.
He just tells you.
He is.
Right.
So that's why, well, at least he's not hurt. Yeah, he's just throwing up a lot.
A.J. Minter's going to need surgery, basically, what he told us.
Yeah, it would be.
We're telling him that you probably should get surgery, kid.
Yeah. That sucks for him.
It does suck.
That sucks for him.
He's blunt.
No,
I
think that's what we like about him.
Right,
he's 100%. Very straightforward. He tells you like it is. He even laughed at me and Howie Rose for suggesting he would get Brandon Nimmo an off day after a 9-RBI game. He is giving Jeff McNeil an off day as well. He had a big game yesterday, too.
Right.
Hit a home run, had a triple. By the way, I'll tell you something. You guys can now appreciate this. I'm very happy the Mets won yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Thrilled, some may say. The guy I'm playing in fantasy this week is the owner of Brandon Nimmo and Jeff McNeil. I got destroyed on a Monday with 9 RBIs from Nimmo, and McNeil drove in a bunch of runs. Anyhow, thank you for that piece of news. Let's go back to Joe in Jersey. Sorry, Joe. We had that news. The floor is yours.
That's okay. I understand. Going back to Belichick and his girlfriend, you guys are familiar with Billions, right?
Yeah.
Maybe she's Paul Giamatti or Belichick's dominatrix because he's so controlling in real world and he needs the submissive side in the bedroom.
There is certainly, Joe, a lot of rumors, unsubstantiated, of course, that this is somehow involving, you know, sex.
Yeah.
But
how does that,
what?
He's not controlling him to the point where she's taking over his duties as coach because of, I don't know, her success in the bedroom.
I mean, maybe.
No chance, man. Come on.
That doesn't happen?
No.
If you are a player at the University of North Carolina,
yeah,
and she's running a lot of things, what's going through your mind as a player?
Well, it depends on what she's running. Like, if she's trying to be a football coach, I'm transferring.
Really?
Yeah. See ya. Now, she's just trying to be supportive of whatever's going on. Great. But, come on.
I'll tell you what you shouldn't do if you're a player. Hit on her.
No.
You can't have a situation in which you end up hooking up with Bill Belichick's girlfriend. That is a scandal waiting to happen.
Right. I want to be here. You guys want me here because I'm having such a great season here. Let me end my career as a New York Met, break whatever milestones or get to whatever milestones. And guess what? We're not negotiating with anyone. This is the deal that I would like. And it's manageable. You're already paying me $30 million this year. Let's make it a clean 4-120 and everybody's happy. And nobody's talking about it anymore.
I don't even think they're
And then we don't have to have this Scott Boras injecting his opinion on what Pete's market should be. He should be making $40
million. But that's why he's not going to accept that, because Scott is still his agent and is still going to advise you're having an MVP kind of season.
Yeah, but he's
not. Go to free agency.
Okay, but I ask you this. I asked it before we had this conversation.
Yes.
Do you think there's going to be a robust market for Pete Alonso after this season with the Mets?
Are you asking me or Scott Boras?
I'm asking you as a representative of Scott Boras.
I think he will have a better market than he just had, but it will not be the robust market Scott Boras thinks. But Scott Boras thinks he's going to have a robust market, which means this conversation would go nowhere. Mm. It would go nowhere. And so Steve Cohen is expressing saying, I'll worry about it in November.
Who's in charge? Well, is it Scott Boras or is it Pete Alonso?
It's complicated.
If Pete Alonso says, hey, I want to be here. I'll take $30 million for the next 4 years at 120 and finish my career as a Met, become an icon, and if it comes down to it, at 35, I'm still mashing, we'll do one-year deals.
Can I ask you one other thing, though, too, that you have to throw in there, and I don't get caught in this, but I do want to bring it up because I'm sure there's a lot of people thinking it. If you're a Met fan, and the Mets are 20-9, they're off to a wonderful start, and everything isn't clicking, obviously.
Yeah.
Juan Soto is not Juan Soto yet. They just got Alvarez and McNeil back. But Pete Alonso has been the MVP of the team through the first 29 games.
No doubt.
Would you mess with that? Would you mess with that by giving him an extension? Wouldn't you say to yourself, you know what?
I think
this is just keep raking, bro.
Giving him an extension makes it even easier for him.
You think so?
100%. It makes him free.
Can I tell you a story?
There's no pressure.
I got to tell you something that's Knicks-Mets related, since today is a Knicks day and we're mixing in the Mets. In 2004, the New York Knicks moved into a playoff spot. No, it wasn't 2004. What year was it? It was after they made the playoffs in 2004. And Isaiah Thomas got an... I want to get this story right. I apologize. I may be muffing it. But the Knicks gave Isaiah Thomas an extension, like, as they got to the 8 seed in the middle of a season. And then the Knicks completely collapsed. And I remember some Knicks fans thinking, oh, my God, why would we do that?
Right.
Wait till the season's over. Like, we haven't accomplished anything yet. And in the case of Pete Alonso, he's had a great month, but would you really want to rush to pay him off of a great month as opposed to saying, go have a great year. I am a billionaire owner. I'll pay you what the market dictates.
Yeah,
assuming again, earn that.
I wouldn't do it over a month. I wouldn't do it over, probably not even at the trade deadline. It'd be as the season is certain, we know what he is.
So you wouldn't do it now?
No, definitely not.
Well, that's
now.
What Steve's saying.
We're just having this conversation right now. Steve is saying, we're going to let him go into free agency,
and
we'll see what happens. Good luck.
But I don't take that as the kicking him out. I take it as he deserves it, we'll pay him if we need to.
What I heard was him saying, I dislike, maybe not Scott Boras, but negotiating with Scott Boras.
This has to happen right now. April 29th, 3:07 p.m. And we did this last year, but we're bringing it back. Is Pete Alonso going to be a Met in 2026, Tiki Barber?
It depends. It depends on Steve Cohen.
That's not there, B square.
If Steve Cohen is open to negotiating with Pete Alonso, and we'll find this out because he'll be asked this frequently now that Heyman opened this can of worms. If he's open to negotiating as the season is getting not towards the end, because you don't want to be messing with the playoffs, but back quarter of this season, then the answer is yes.
That was very convoluted. What's your answer, Teak?
If Steve Cohen changes his tune that, yes, we'll negotiate with Pete to sign him long-term in the back quarter of this season, he will be a Met.
So you're saying, let me just clarify.
If Steve Cohen is saying, go to free agency, Pete, we love you, test the market, he's not going to be a Met.
I got you now. So if he gets to free agency, he's gone.
Yes.
But you still think there's a chance they would get something done before the season is over?
Yes.
Okay. I completely disagree with you on both accounts. Let me write that down. April 29th, 3:07 p.m. By the way, speaking of April 29th, coming up a little after 5 o'clock, it's a new segment here on Evan and Tiki. We will ask Sal Licata if the NL East is over. So we will find out from Sal right around 5:06, 5:07, if the NL East is over.
The NL East is over.
That's not today. That was a few years ago.
I am wrong.
Sean Morash, will Pete Alonso be a Met in 2026?
I think the moment Vlad Guerrero Jr. re-signed in Toronto, Pete Alonso was always going to be a Met in 2026.
Lugie, will Pete Alonso be a Met in 2026?
Pete Alonso will 1,000% be a Met in 2026. And one little part of that clip that we didn't mention is that Steve Cohen acknowledged how much of a fan favorite Pete is. Pete's going to have this monster season. There's no shot they don't re-sign him.
Yeah, you know what's funny?
That's why it's going to happen before the season.
I agree, because you know what? It's going to be, you know when it's going to be a big topic? When Pete Alonso is at the All-Star game as an actual All-Star this year, not just doing the Home Run Derby.
Right.
Every year, that's a topic at the All-Star game, and that's where I think it'll get done around that time period.
I think that Steve Cohen lets his baseball people make baseball decisions, but I think sometimes you have to make a business decision.
This is a business decision.
And this past offseason,
Juan Soto was a business decision.
Absolutely. It was baseball and business. He's a hell of a baseball player. I think David Stearns wanted him too, but it's also business. If
there was a moment to let Pete Alonso go away. It was this offseason, despite the home run against Milwaukee. He was coming off a down year. Plus, they added Juan Soto. And so the Mets could have easily said to their fans, and they were already selling a bunch of tickets, we love Pete, it didn't work out, but we gave you Juan Soto. This offseason, and I don't know what the Mets season will hold, whether it's a playoff berth and an early exit or a deep postseason run, or dare I say a world championship. I don't know. But it is going to be a very tough sell to lose Pete Alonso and not have something else to show their fans. And if you look at free agency a year from now, not that anyone wants to do it, there's nothing they would show their fans.
I got something to show
them.
They
did Juan Soto. They did would not have that this year.
I got something to show them.
Go ahead.
A World Series trophy.
Here's what's complicated about that. I get it. That would make it the easiest. When the New York Yankees won the World Series in 2009, and they let Hideki Matsui walk through that door, how did you feel, Sean? Did you say, well, we won the World Series, no biggie? Or did it bother you that they let the World Series MVP walk out that door?
Of course it bothered me.
Well,
we just saw him win the MVP. I wanted more.
Ask the Met fan, and I'm too young for this, Teague, how they felt when Ray Knight was shown the door after 1986. I know it's not the World Series. Ask the Met fan what it felt like when Daniel Murphy was shown the door after carrying them to the World Series in 15.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Well, you always can, Teague. You picked me to ride along, you're not Tommy.
Exactly. What did Matsui do after he left the Yankees?
I think he was terrible for the Rays.
Thank you.
They went to the Angels first.
Guess what?
Oh, it was the Angels? I forgot.
Maybe. Who was the general manager at that point? Was it Cashman?
Yes.
Yeah. Cashman's been the GM my whole life.
Right. Yeah, so exactly. So maybe Brian Cashman, who everybody's been crushing for the last decade, maybe he actually played it right. Let him walk because he's washed.
He did, but you still tugged at the heartstrings.
It doesn't matter.
Pete Alonso.
He made the right baseball decision.
I gotcha.
Give Brian Cashman credit for making the right decision.
Pete Alonso will be a Met in 2026.
Okay.
He will be. So there you go. We've all got it on record. Let's go.
Ryan Clifford comes up, mashes. Next thing you know, Pete who?
Well, it's funny. Back in March, one of my other long-term predictions, see, you guys forget this, but I write it down, was, and this is before Pete's start, and this is before the way the season began, I predicted Pete would be gone. I said, it's 1 year and he's gone,
right,
and the first baseman in 2026 is going to be Mark Vientos, with Brett Beatty having a monster year this year and being the third baseman. So I've already changed my tune from March. Let's go to JT in Jersey City. How are you, JT?
What up, JT?
Hey, Evan and Tiki. Thanks for taking the call. Yeah, I got to chime in on Alonzo, you know, because I'm a it's me, Evan, Joe B, and Pete Hoffman, the Alonzo fan club.
That's true.
But yeah, we can still blame Nimmo, but anyway, getting past that. So I definitely think Pete is going to re-sign before the year's over. I mean, the Vlad Guerrero deal definitely. I agree with Sean. That definitely put that all in motion.
Right.
For sure. You could easily see, hey, you know, we got Vlad at, you know, whatever he's making, almost $40 million a year for 14 years. We can't sign Pete for 5 or 6 years for $30 million.
Right.
The
high end of the market is set. So you should know exactly where he fits.
Right, exactly. And look, if he's shown that he last year was not who he is, he's showing it right now. It's like a totally different player, right? But that's really what he always was, right? When we look back at the past
seasons. Yeah, I think to a degree, JT. I think he's always been a clutch player. I think the banner that's been hung on him has been unfair the last year and so, where they've said he isn't a clutch player. He's a clutch player. He's not a .330 hitter, though. That we've never seen before.
No.
And I'm not sure that's actually going to happen this season, but he's having a great year. And one of the reasons he's having a great year, let's be honest, one of the reasons Pete Alonso is having a great year, you want to guess why? Sean's raising his hand. Sean, there are a few reasons, but one of the main reasons Pete Alonso is having a great year,
Juan Soto's sitting in front of him,
is Juan Soto. It's absolutely true.
Yeah.
So I get the disappointment from lack of production, and he needs to produce more, but the impact that other players are feeling, including Pete Alonso, it's pretty apparent.
Hoff hit me with something that definitely challenges my math skills. And even as I plotted through it, It's honestly one of the more fascinating things that I think he's ever asked on the show. And I don't know my answer. So I'm going to present it to you. And it's about Judge, and it's about Alonso. So right now, Pete, who got a base hit his first time up, right? But based on entering the game. Enter the game hitting 343. Aaron Judge enters, actually off today, is hitting 427. So the way Pete framed it, at the end of the year, which player is closer to their current average? Okay. So I'm like, huh. It just seemed like it took me a while to even find. I'm like, well, all right, I got you. It definitely took me a second to get it. And let's see. Well, Judge, who's hitting 427, if he were to finish it, say, 360. I picked an arbitrary number, 360, boom. That's 67 points off of where he's at now, 427. And Pete, you know, I'm going to adjust based on past performances, based on overall talent, whatever. Pete at 343, I just picked 280. Even though he maybe could be a tick higher, but 280 for him would be, what, something like 67 points off the mark, I think. 67 or 63, whatever it is. It's in the neighborhood between 65 and 70 for each guy. So do I think, basically what it comes down to simplify this out, do I think it's going to be Judge hitting 360 or Pete hitting 280? Now, Pete could hit 290 and Judge could hit 373. I don't know. First, let me let you answer it since you posed the question. What is your opinion right now? Which player will finish closer to their current average, which are off the charts?
I think, personally speaking, Pete will be close to it because they're still going to drop about 100 points. Like the Judge last year hit 322, which was phenomenal. He's batting 427. Like, even if he drops off like 75 points, it's going to be because I don't think he's going to bat 350. I don't think he's going to bat 340. I think he's going to significantly drop down. We were talking about it. If he has a bad streak of over 30.
Over 30, I ask you to calculate this.
Pete Alonso, I don't think he's going to get 280. Or 280 to me is way too high for him, but I think he'll be closer to the 260 mark. So I think they're both going to fall off closer to 100 points, closer to it.
Uh-huh.
I think at the end of the day, it's just 260 is less than the 320. So that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I think Judge has an opportunity to be great. I think he's going to come closer to dropping off closer to 100 points from here.
I see how you got there. I would go the other way. I don't agree with either. I think that Pete has a chance to be higher than that. And I think really Aaron has a chance where we look back, it's going to be like one of those freak shows where you go to Baseball Reference and you see like 359 staring at you, 363. I mean, the one thing about, listen, we talk about Judge and we know his approach and he's refined it over the years, you know, 322 a year ago, whatever it was. So it's not like this is out of nowhere, but Pete Alonso's changed his approach too. And I was listening to Keith talk about this last night where, you know, he's usually 2-1. Two to one strikeouts to walks. He's 1-1. I think he's like one more walk or one more strikeout than the other, which is not Pete Alonso. Now, you can very easily say, well, that's all right, maybe it's a bit of an outlier start. I don't think it is because of where he's hitting the ball, the way he's taking some tough, you know, some of that soft stuff away that he used to go at. Like, he just looks like he's changed his approach. And it looks like it's more in line with how he used to hit when he had a 270 to 260.
I got to be honest, and I'm not comparing him to David Wright at all, but it reminds me of when David Wright used to get in his first year or second year, he was the best 0-2 hitter in baseball. If he got an 0-2 pitch on him, he'd find a way to work the count and either get a base hit or get a walk, whatever it is. Alonso is much closer to that these days because, like yesterday, he walked a 3-2 pitch. They're throwing him that cheese outside. They're throwing him stuff that he would chase last year.
Yep.
He's not touching it. He's not even close to touching it.
Well, that's why I say, and again, I know I like to get some like deep in the numbers sometimes. Sometimes it's boring for some people. But that's why I said the way he's taken pitches this year.
Right.
Like, you want to see a good hitter? Watch how he takes a pitch. There's no flinch. There's no jump. Like, he's seeing it early, and he's reading it early. So, my answer is Judge, but it could be close.
Can I just say one thing? Because, sure. Again, I've heard people now reference Judge and Barry Bonds.
What is it? Who's eating? I smell food all of a sudden. What's going on?
That I don't know, but our door is wide open. Yours is closed, so you shouldn't smell it. So
I do, though.
It's through the vent.
Oh, got it.
Through the vent.
It's not, and it's not Dove Stew. He didn't open it up yet.
All right. What are you going to say,
Hal? Next break.
But Barry Bonds, at age 37, hit his highest batting average, which was 370. The year prior, he was 328. Is this people saying that Aaron Judge is on that Barry Bonds type of year right now?
Yep.
I mean, if that's the case, then we're talking about that jump where 322 to 370 isn't that much.
I don't think it's that much now. The only thing is, what did Bonds, how many home runs did he have that year?
That was 46, 110, and I forget how many walks he had.
Oh, yeah, no, Aaron's healthy. Aaron's flying by all, certainly 46 and certainly 110.
The year before he batted 328, he had 73 home runs.
Yeah, that's what he's Judge, he's, you know, listen, 10's amazing, but yeah, he's not hitting 73 home runs. So, you know, he's just, he's learned, he's one of these guys who's gotten better later in his career in terms of, like, I mean, some guys come out and they flash crazy power, like a young Darryl. But Darryl never really refined his approach. He was always, you know, 250, 260, like that kind of average around there. But this is not like out of nowhere for Judge. He's been this kind of hitter for a while. Kevin's in West Islip. Kev, BT and Sal, how you doing?
Hey, Brandon, how you doing, pal?
Good. What's going on?
Just real quick, I just wanted to shout out that I actually, when I first listened to you about 4 or 5 years ago, wasn't really thrilled, but you've really grown on me, like, both with your sports knowledge, your passion, and your takes. Like, I gotta give you props for that. You're really cool,
that.
Dude.
Thank you, man. That's cool. You know what? Listen, you know why I think that's really cool? First of all, and there's a lot of people who disagree, and that's fine. But like, yeah, so like, I think the easiest thing is like when somebody likes you from the get go, and that's awesome. But when somebody's like, nah, I don't like this dude, but then you stick with it, and you give it a shot. That's what means. That really means a lot. So thanks for saying that, man.
No problem. No problem. You and I gotta tell you, I'd love to see you paired up with Keith. By the way,
I'm paired up with Shaq. Anyway, a partner.
Well, I don't want to talk about him right now.
Hey.
I'm not gonna go there.
Keep it moving.
Keep the call positive. So listen. I think it's really simple. Everybody's like, nobody's looking at the elephant in the room with Soto. Now, I'm not a Met fan. I'm not a Yankee fan. I'm actually a Reds fan, but more of both a Met and Yankee fan, too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at this, as Evan would say, an independent objective observer, whatever he calls it.
Yeah, what is that acronym? I've heard him say it. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
So Soto has always been about the money. Always. Mm-hmm. He's got his money. Yeah. He's complacent. That's it. It's not about the Bronx. It's not about Citi Field. It's not about the teammates. It's not about nothing. Now, I'm not saying that's the answer, but why is nobody thinking that's the answer? I don't get it.
Well, number one, I think we have too much respect for the way he attacks his craft over the years. Like, if there wasn't evidence that he was just, you know, a real tactician in the box and a real, really, like, deeply into the mind games of hitting and the psychology of hitting. Like, everything about Soto, to me, from a distance, obviously, tells me that this guy opens his eyes and he's thinking about hitting. His approach, refining it, perfecting it. And that doesn't flip all. Like, I think this guy's motivation is to be a great hitter. I also think he's deeply motivated to be a better right fielder. I mean, he's talked about that. I mean, I haven't seen it yet this year. I don't know if we will. But, I'm not going there. I mean, not because I'm afraid to. I just don't believe it. I think there's some guys that you can say that about. No question. I don't think he's one of them. I really, really don't.
Get the scuttlebutt on your favorite teams here on The Fan.
Oh, my God. Wow. Dovey pulling up an old jam, huh? Well, all right, BT and Sal back on The Fan. You know, there's other music that I prefer from a baseball perspective, but this is an amazing accomplishment, and let's face it. I mean, this guy's, he's a staple in New York. I mean, New York sports, he has been on the scene forever. He's as good as they come. He doesn't pursue the spotlight, but it found him last night. It found him last night as we found out that Chris Majakowski produced and engineered his 5,000th consecutive game for the Mets, which means, you know, no pneumonia, or if you have it, you're still going to grind it and go to work. No weddings or nothing. I mean, there's a game. Madge is in the house, and he's with me, and I've known him for a long time. So I wanted to pop him on the air today. Chris, what's going on, buddy? Welcome to the show. How you doing, man?
Good, BT. How are you?
Awesome. First of all, congratulations. Now,
did St. John sign anyone today?
No, but they spent about $2 million the other day just to get one player. Oh, they crushed it, man. And listen, you referenced the St. John's because you and I have done a lot of games together, but you cut your teeth. You started. What was that? So that was 93. When did you get out of Fordham?
In 89.
All right, so you get out of Fordham in 89. Now, you know, whether it's on the air like me or behind the scenes like you, it's hard to break into the industry, especially in New York, which is why I had to travel around the country, you know, and learn my trade a little bit. How did you get connected with the fan? And like, it took a couple of years. How did you get the job that you got?
Well, I started working with a company, JBF Remote Service. It was Joel Blumberg and Brian Ferguson. You might remember Brian from the Yankees radio. And Joel had done stuff all around town and all that. And unfortunately, both are passed at this point. But I started working with them. I was working primarily just visiting shows. I worked with Harry Callis and Harry Carey at Shea when the Phillies and the Cubs came in.
Wow.
So that's how I got started, again, with the visiting teams.
Yep.
And then I got in at the Garden because Brian would take off for spring training with the Yankees, and they eased me in there to do some of the Knicks and Rangers stuff.
Okay.
By
the way, Chris, similar time frame, you're talking mid-90s with Riley,
yes,
and the 90s. Rangers?
Early 90s.
Oh, early 90s. Go ahead.
Early 90s, yep. You know, 90, 91, 92.
Okay.
And from working some of those games that were on Fan at the time, I got to know Eric Spitz.
Mm-hmm. And I love Spitzy.
And then, as we say, one thing led to another.
Yeah.
And eventually I slid into the Mets job in May of 93.
Okay. So, you know, you've had some amazing moments here. You know, a couple of the World Series with the Mets and, you know, a lot of tough seasons, as we know. Do you almost become desensitized to the tough seasons? Because the one thing, like, you're at, I see you at the Garden. I see you with St. John's, I see you in Queens, you do the Knicks, you do the Rangers, you do football, you do the Mets, obviously. Like, do you ever just get tired of sports?
That is a very good question that we can all ask ourselves.
Honestly,
right?
Yeah.
You know, and yes, in working in the business, do you become a little bit desensitized to it? Especially in my case, where I'm sitting in the back of the booth, so if something big does happen, I can't exactly be hollering out and all that, and I got to make sure that I don't blow the mix on the board.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
I've got to be paying attention to that. When, just off baseball for a second, but I was mixing the show when the Giants beat the Patriots on the Manning's pass to Plaxico.
Wow.
And as that's happening, my thought isn't the Giants might win the Super Bowl here. My first thought was, don't screw up the mix on this because it's going to be on NFL films forever if they score.
Yeah, man.
So that's going through my mind sometimes more so than what's going out on the field.
Wow. So, okay, was Murph the first radio voice that you really worked with? Was it Bob Murphy?
Well, in the Mets booth, Murph and Gary. But like I said, I had worked with Harry Callis.
Yep.
And Harry Carey used to do some innings on the Cubs broadcast. So when they came into Shea, I had to go downstairs with the tape recorder, give Harry Carey a mic while he interviewed the manager, while running a stopwatch and signaling him with my fingers, okay, you've done 1 minute, two, three, four, and then he knew he had to wrap up.
Yep, yep.
So
wow.
That was like one of my first gigs, one of my first assignments when I started to get into this business.
How was Murphy? I mean, his voice is legendary, you know, just the old-timer. What was Murph like back in the day?
Oh, Murph, you know, old-timer. That's exactly, you know, that's exactly it, you know. And he and Gary had their moments, certainly, in the booth. But it just the old-time, you know, we're just doing the ball game here. And but Murph was always very good to me.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when Dave DeAngelis, I think Dove might have mentioned his name, had left, and the first year in '93 they had someone else engineering the games, and it was a little bit rocky. I'll put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Come back from the All-Star break off the road. And I met Joy Murphy, Bob's wife, for the first time. And Murph introduces me to Joy, and she said, I just want to thank you so much. I said, why? He said, Bob is so much calmer when he gets home after, from the ballpark every night.
Okay, that's a good compliment for you, yeah. All right. Who tagged you the immortal one? Was that Howie?
That was Gary.
Oh, it was Gary.
That was the work of Gary Cohen.
And when did that start? How long ago? What was the first time he dropped it?
Well, I mean, Gary was, you know, I worked with him from 93 until he moved over to SNY in 05.
Yeah.
I also did the St. John's games
with Gary.
Gary and Eddie Coleman.
Eddie C. They were good together.
Yes.
I liked them together. Yeah. They're better than me and Mink.
No one's better than you and Mink. Bingo. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on. But Eddie was great because at that time we were also doing a visiting opponents interview on the pregame show.
Oh, God, yeah.
And Eddie would stroll in at, you know, let's say we have an 8 o'clock tip against UConn.
Mm-hmm.
And Eddie would stroll in a little bit after 7. And say, hey, you got the, you know, I'll be right back. He would just go down, he'd get Jim Calhoun, and come back and have the interview. Say, Ed, 45 minutes before the game, you're going to get Calhoun. Oh, I'll be right back.
Man.
And so, here comes Eddie C. with the Calhoun interview.
He got the job done, as he always did. We're talking to Chris Majakowski, the immortal one. Madge, you guys have heard the name forever. He's been a part of the scene forever. 5,000 straight Met games, and I'm happy you had your moment last night on the big board. Now, when you do that many games, invariably along the way, Chris, you're missing some family commitments. You're missing a wedding, you're missing a birthday, you're missing an anniversary. How tough has that been for you?
God, you know, there have been times when I should have been elsewhere, but we couldn't disrupt the streak. And, you know, we've worked around it. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. So you were, I think you did a lot of Mike and Mad Dog remotes, no?
Yes.
All right, so what was the first time you got hooked up with them?
Oh, I don't remember. Once I started with them, they used to come out, you know, and they might be out on opening day. Definitely once Mets Yankees started, they were always at the ballpark for that.
Oh, yeah. Fenway, they'd go up to Fenway for sure.
Yeah. I would go up during the postseason. When they started in 96 and started in those runs.
Yeah, what about Bar A? What about the beat stuff? Would you do the beat show?
No, I never did the beat. I always did Radio Row with them.
Yep, I used to see it at the Super Bowl. I got you. I knew that. Yeah.
So Radio Rows. Definitely, you know, Yankees postseason. And when Cherney would call me and say, oh, you know, the Mets are done, so you're not doing anything. You go up to the Bronx and help out Mike and the dog?
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Park. Not a problem.
So the mics are off, right? And Mike and Chris go to break. You having conversations with them? You know, are they talking to each other? Like, were you with them during their good period or their bad period?
Both.
Oh. Okay. You got any stories?
Nothing I want to say right now.
You can tell me on the road with St. John's. So speaking of the road, so you start in 93. You know, it's just a different civilization. It's a different culture. Guys are going out. They're spending all, you know, who knows what they're doing, you know, drinking. Like, the modern athlete is just very aware of being filmed and I think also more in tune with his body. I mean, what are these road trips like now compared to probably the circus that it was back in the day?
Well, I mean, look, I'm at an age where I'm not going out that much myself now on the road, so I can't really speak to what they may be doing. But, yes, back in the day, you know, again, Eddie Coleman was doing Mets pre and post and all, and we'd be out there, and we'd be out on, you know, Rush Street in Chicago, and, you know, some members of the bullpen might be in the back of the lodge, and we might have a couple, you know, and just be hanging out and all that.
All right, man, we'll let you run. But do you remember the game? And I got a little trouble for this, but it's long enough where I can say it. I don't know how to. I basically lost my mind at the end of the St. John's Seton Hall game. Like they were just when they were terrible, and they had that that conference losing streak, like 30 games. Do you remember that? Like, vaguely? I know you do so
vaguely.
Much. Okay.
Yes.
And
yes.
I think they busted.
You've had a couple of those episodes.
Well, that's true. That's true.
Surely over the years.
All right, buddy.
But that's all in the past now. It's we're looking forward.
Yeah, let the good times roll, Leo. And I think St. John's was up. And it was the first Big East game of the year. And the focus was like, come on, guys, can you please end the streak? Just have a good season here. I think it was early in Norm's regime, whatever. And, like, they blew this lead, and I just went bonkers. And then, like, I heard, like, some of the priests weren't thrilled that they were listening back yes. at the rectory at school. Do you remember that story?
Yes. It rings a bell.
Man. Well, listen, man, I don't know if you got 5,000 more St. John's games in you, but wherever the finish line is, whenever you get there, and I know it is down the road, it is going to be a rest well-deserved. An Iron Man, a good guy. A humble guy, and really, dude, I say this, I'm not going to name names, I wouldn't do that, but like when I pull up to the Garden and you're not there, I'm like, we'll get the job done, it'll still be good, but Madge is in here, never quite feels the same, so that's the highest compliment that I could give you, buddy.
Hey, BT, thank you so much, my friend.
You got thank it. You. You got it, the immortal one. Madge, 5,000 games? Oh my goodness. So let me see. Can you pull up? I know we got a break. Can you pull up, if you can beat me to it, the Mets year-by-year record? I want to see, what was their record in 93? That you're starting to get into some weird times there. Obviously, the 86, the 88 season. Now you start bringing in some of these players, like the Colemans and the Saberhagens. I mean, it was a mess for a while. Hundley playing the outfield. All right, let me see. I actually got it. All right, so Mets starts in 1993. And the New York Mets were 59-103. Good season in Queens. God, they were just wretched. I didn't realize they were quite that bad. 59-103, my God. The year before he joined, they were 72-90. 94 was the condensed season, clearly, so they won't really count that. Then in 95, they were 69-75. Then they were 71-91, and then they start ticking up a little bit, obviously, with the 97, yeah, all right, 98, 99, obviously a really good year, lost the NLCS. So it did not start well for Madge. Hopefully it finishes well for Madge, unless, of course, they play the Yankees in the World Series.